At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come. This is the Eat, Sleep, Elite, Repeat podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. Introducing first, the man of the hour. So rise up and feel the power. It's Gnarly Charlie.
Let's go!
First of all, come on, Anna Jay.
Yes, sir.
You gotta come up with your own gimmicks here.
You gotta address this right off the top.
I mean, I feel like if I don't, I'm probably, you know, gonna get somebody that says something. No, I'm joking, of course. But, hey, speaking of other news, damn, how do you go up 2-0 in the first inning with a home run from Aaron Judge, and then you lose the game? Aaron Judge has been silent this entire playoffs.
Bro, didn't he get struck out 4 times the other night?
Listen, 62 home runs, legendary, obviously. One home run in the playoffs so far. Just saying.
Yes, sir.
And amen. Best pitching in the game, just saying it now. Screw, was it Tampa Bay they always say has the best pitching? Fuck Tampa, we beat them. All right, let's move on.
We are a pro Guardians podcast here, if you guys can't tell. A little baseball action for you. But Garrett, oh my, what a week of wrestling. And right off the top, I got to say this before we get going. The Canada crowd, our Canadians, our good brothers, our Saskatoon goons, they fucking the goons. Brought it. It was another, this was a rampage. I think it was taped at a different time. It was something weird.
It was weird, yeah.
They literally showed out. I was looking at our schedule, too, and there's like 4 or 5 live Rampages coming up before full gear. I think there's only one Rampage that's not live. That is
a sign that we're going to get like a live Rampage permanently and also a longer Rampage soon, because I feel like they've been sort of like looking at it, and you can kind of sort of tell that people like are okay with the idea. Like, I think Tony even said like a week or two ago that was Warner Brothers that was more interested in doing that, I think, than him, you know?
Yeah.
The 2-hour thing. I think he wanted the 2 hours for the anniversary show, but then I think they ended up doing the 2 hours with Rampage Battle for the Belts because it was just easier to reschedule it like that than to try and move it around the playoffs like they had done previously.
And I feel like it was a success for Battle of the Belts, man. It made it much easier because every other one of them, it was immediately spoiled online.
And Tony could not avoid it. Did a great job of managing to book a story into that with Pac. You know what I mean? What a great way for his, for the last week of his title reign to end up being. You know what I mean? Like, what an incredible finish to a pretty great title reign, but which we'll get to. But yeah, I mean, just really great wrestling this week. And as always, Charlie, before we get to that, actually, rewind myself for a second. There's actually a couple of orders of business to take care of at the top of the show, which is whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on, be that Google or Apple or Spotify. Make sure you follow and or subscribe on those channels, whatever you want to call them, and so you make sure you get this in your feed every week so that you can listen to it and you can hang and bang with the best of them. And you'll get some like insight on stuff like I'm about to talk about probably for like an hour on Dark about Action Andretti, even though I probably shouldn't waste that much time on that guy. But I don't know, when people catch my interest, it happens. So anyway, that being said, also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Bane Duke. That's BaneDuke. And Charlie is at Charlie with an X instead of an A. Hey, yo, that's what I was saying when I saw the bunny this week. But anyway, no, not really. I respect the relationships. But that being said, though, Charlie, we had some really good wrestling this week, and it is, what is it, evens or odds? I don't even know. I wasn't paying attention. But I know you have the bump. You're on the bump. You're on the mound. So, Charlie, hit us with the first pitch.
Yes, and, plenty of things to pick from here. Real quick, I want to say, if you guys are like, what happened to the show last week? It didn't show up till like nearly before Dynamite. Yeah, we used a different program. You guys might notice our audio sounds a little better tonight. We are using a much better thing. This is the thing we used in our first episode. And see, so yeah, if you guys are like, where the hell was the show last week? Yeah, it took over 24 hours to render, and it was an hour and a half show. We weren't going to go back and redo it. So if you guys did catch it, appreciate it. We dove into some cool stuff, but yeah, this is going to be a fun one here. So kicking us off with the favorites, for me, I think we might be bookending here. I don't know, but Luchasaurus, Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, I mean, Garrett, they finally got in the ring and wrestled their match, right? You know, a boy with his dinosaur, Jurassic Express, they've won tag team gold, they've had some of the most memorable matches in AEW, and now the Canadian crowd welcomes them. They absolutely destroyed Christian, by the way, with the Maple Leafs comments. Easy heat, beautiful heat. He said he had to guarantee the same level tonight, and the Maple Leafs losing in the playoffs. And my God, I bet that hit people hard, because you know they were the team that was promised.
I bet that was real easy for him to say too, because he's been through.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. This was the David versus Goliath match, right? You know, Jack Perry compared to Luchasaurus. It's a much different comparison. So they went out there, and I felt the emotion. I felt the emotion from Jack. I felt the emotion from Taz. Oh! Taz was really helping us out there, you know, bringing Jungle Boy home. And God, there were so many moves I'd love to talk about. There was a sunset flip from the ring to the floor, and just so many good things. And yeah,
bro, this is so bad because he got roasted for the Mets this week. You did that. I have a whole bit lined up during Dark Elevation against Taz, or maybe it's Dark for Taz. Oh, this is bad. Bad. I'm sorry, Taz. I hope you do. I actually kind of hope you do hear this, because then you'll probably make a comment. But still,
So kind of at the end of our match here, it's, like I said, this was very. They got the crowd involved a lot, and I think that was a smart move here. So towards the end, Christian dips from commentary. He goes to distract Jack. Luchasaurus sat up, like kind of an Undertaker style. Perry then was flapjacked and turned inside out with a lariat. In the corner, Luchasaurus got fucking kicked in the nuts, trapped in the tree of woe. He got crotched.
Yep.
But escaped and drove Perry to the mat with the buckle bomb and choke slam for the two. Perry then hit the tilt-a-whirl backbreaker to a crucifix slam. Perry then hit a poison rana and a kill switch for a very close two count.
Dude, Luchasaurus is just ridiculous. Like, Luchasaurus versus Wardlow might be, like, the greatest match of all time.
That has to be what we're going to, right?
Like, maybe. That would be it. Big versus big. Awesome.
Like, if we're building Luchasaurus
or him versus Joe, bro, either match is great.
Either match would work, but I think Luchasaurus and Wardlow could be something really cool if done, you know, properly. If the build-up, and it's not just a week. The crowd really got into it when the snare trap was applied.
Yes.
I think this match, it had a really early commercial break in it because it was the first match of the show. I think it actually benefited the match a little bit, even watching it without commercials. I think, like, watching it, because I saw it both ways just because I was curious. I was like, I wonder what this looks like the other way.
Yeah.
And I think it actually benefited them going into that commercial break early and then coming back out and being able to build up that momentum with the crowd instead of having to sort of, like, sometimes they feel like they have to just stop when they hit commercials, you know, like. Which is good, but sometimes you want it, if it's a good match, to keep the flow, you know, to keep the crowd going, you know?
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. It just pays off so well when you, how do you say this? Like, take care of the crowd like that? If you give the crowd something to be excited about, whether it's, you know, locking in these crazy submissions or some big spots, they treat you well. They respond back. So, after the snare trap was applied, Luchasaurus got the ropes. Christian briefly distracted Perry climbing the ropes, and Luchasaurus hit a super choke slam and a burning hammer to win. And this was a very fun opening contest. I thought the burning hammer looked great. This is not going to be the last time these guys wrestle. And this was cool for Canada, too, because your first, you know, Dynamite match, and, you know, I'm sure they had some fun stuff taped for Elevation and Dark that we'll get into for next week, but your first Dynamite match is this first match between a tag team that's won gold.
Absolutely.
And I think it paid off well. So what did you think of this match? And then take us into your favorite.
It's a really big pop for Jungle Boy, which I enjoy, you know, of course. But, you know, you just never know when someone's coming out in random city. They've never wrestled on TV before, at least, you know. That was good. There was a nice snap on the German suplex that they hit at one point. And there's a really nasty bump that Jungle Boy took into the barricade that I thought was really good looking. And he just, you can tell, I don't know why, I didn't actually write this down in my notes, but I meant to. You can tell that Jungle Boy just likes to bump around. Like, he has a really good time just taking bumps, you know?
Bump around.
That's going to persist later into his career when he gets older, but I'm all for it now. If he just likes flipping around like a kid on the playground, I'm all for it. You know what I mean? But there was a really, really great spot from Luchasaurus where, I mean, they set up this table spot early in the match. I don't remember how early, and it's just kind of chilling there for a little bit. And they keep teasing it. And then eventually we have Jungle Boy flip over the top for a sunset flip. And I actually think the move looked super clean. I think sometimes when they do that flip, there's like that little bit of a delay and you're like, oh, they're struggling. But sometimes it just looks really, you know, silly because it looks a little choreographed, you know? In this case, I think they actually timed it perfectly well. And it looked like that Luchasaurus actually took a pretty nice little bump there through the table, which is getting, really, Charlie, there's only one thing you can say to a spot like that. So, Luchasaurus, you are the, and I'm gonna say sole recipient this time, because you're the only one that took that bump. I don't care if Jungle Boy had completely flipped, and unless he landed through the table, you're still able to take that bump off of it. So, you know, Jungle Boy, love you. You have to do some more to earn that from me. You know what you should do? Do the bunny spot. Get somebody in some barbed wire with that. Did he already do this with the snare trap? Maybe he already did.
If he hasn't, he should do it against Luchasaurus.
You do it against Christian. But anyway,
yeah.
I love Luchasaurus, but Christian deserves it. Anyway, and then, yeah, like you said, the Crucifix Bomb and Poison Rana, they're both two-way super athletic guys, so I'm not surprised by this. And you just forget every now and then, especially with how the wrestling suits have me, they're booking him now in matches, that Luchasaurus is really talented in the ring as well. So, for a big guy, so.
To go to your thing with the table, you know, when you set up these big things, when you have these setups like this, and you pay it off, and it's actually paid off as big as that, it makes it hit that much more.
Absolutely, 100%. And so I would say, really solid opening to the show, and made me really excited for what was to come. And Taz got me into it.
I'm sorry, right. Jungle Boy. That's going to be there randomly when we talk about your matches, my brother.
I'm sorry. It's got to happen. All right. So, yeah. So off of that, we have some news to talk about, don't we, Charlie? There's some newsly news stuff, huh?
Well, we got your favorite first.
Oh, yeah. You know what? No, we don't need to talk about it. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. As far as I'm concerned, there was no favorite. We're just pretending like that part of the show didn't exist. I think I blocked it out of my memory because it was so spectacular. We had the AEW All-Atlantic Championship match. I'm just used to going first. I don't know why. In my head, I just remember those ones more, I guess, apparently. But... anyway, that being said, we had Pac taking on Orange Cassidy, which was set up last week, I believe. Well, actually, it was really kind of set up over the last couple of weeks, and really last month or so, because of that was the first match, and since you know Pac came back to television, and then we have Orange Cassidy going around doing stuff and sort of being on and off TV. Anyway, that being said, sorry, I had to cough there. Anyway, that being said, we had. What I wrote at the beginning of this, before the match even started, is we had Orange Cassidy's unstoppable wave of momentum colliding with Pac's basically unbeatable win streak that he's been putting together recently, which I thought was really nice. You know, when storylines collide like that, it's a really nice sort of, like, both of them are on these unstoppable streaks right now. You know, Cassidy coming back from his injury and Pac finally getting the opportunity he's felt like he's deserved the whole time in AEW, you know?
Yeah.
And... oh, some good stuff in this match. We had Pac refusing to accept the pockets and the devastating kicks and taking them for his own and saying, nah, you won't get me with this, pal. I'll put your hands in your pockets. I'll do the kicks to you. And Cassidy was having none of it and just leveled him. And I loved it. That was good stuff. I love when wrestlers wrestle each other multiple times and the same shit that they did in previous matches does not work on them, you know? It's great. It's good storytelling. It's how it should always be. It's probably really annoying when you only know how to do one thing, and so that thing is the thing that you do every time. I'm not calling any specific wrestlers out here, but if the shoe fits, then you know who you are. Sorry. I'm not specifically calling anybody out, but I see it a lot, you know? And so that being said, though, it's really great stuff. There was a lot of really great spots in this. There was a tope that was caught and reversed into a falcon arrow. That was a really great spot. You wouldn't think that that would happen either, but like these are the kinds of things that if you're going to wrestle two of your best wrestlers, this is now the third match that they've had against each other, you know, they're going to pick up on some of the things that they do. So this is all really great stuff. We had a barely beaten count, I believe, after that spot as well, for the tombstone on the ramp. That's good. This ramp, you mentioned something about this, about these sets the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
With like the ramps being different and stuff like that. And I kind of like, I don't want it, you know, Dynamite's set to be different every week, but if they can do slight differences in it to make these spots a little more different, you know what I mean? Yeah. Why not?
I love this setup. The ramp was very long, yes, but it was a big arena. So
yeah, so that does make sense. And yeah. And he barely beat the count. Then we had Cassidy firing up, locked in the brutalizer, which he slapped right on as soon as he beat the count. This is a great spot setups, by the way. Like just like or whatever you want to call it, the psychology of setting that up. It's like Pac was just like, you know, I don't even know if that was planned, but he threw right into it. And of course, Cassidy knows what to do. Submission, you know what I mean? Like, Charlie, the DDTs are still out of control. They were close to another Simmons Award this week, but I was
this
like,
is unbelievable.
You know, I was like, you know, if I start giving it for the same spot from the same two guys every time, is it really like what am I doing? You know, like,
well, that's just the magic that they create together. You know,
I have talked about possibly retroactively awarding them toward the end of the year so that I have more to work with. So I'll look into that. But that being said, Orange Cassidy. Sets up a couple of orange punches in a row, and it, honestly, I like that, again, Pac not willing to just, oh, he's doing the orange punch, not letting you do that. Didn't matter, though. Orange Cassidy set him up. He got one orange punch. He hits the second orange punch. The crowd is going insane at this point, and Cassidy pins Pac 1-2-3 in the center of the ring to become the new All-Atlantic Champion. Charlie, I got to tell you, it was like 6 months ago on this podcast, I was saying, I love Orange Cassidy. He's my favorite wrestler in the company, but I don't ever see him winning a championship because they don't see him ever winning a championship. Am I glad to be wrong?
And, yeah, so well deserved. Like you pointed out, their third match together, all three of them have been magic. There was a random fourth match, but no one talks about it because Orange Cassidy was hurt. It was just a lot of a fucking shenanigans, so no one counts it.
Yeah, we should.
It wasn't a real match. But the celebration, the orange confetti, this,
yes,
honestly, kind of surprised me. I'm not even going to lie to you there.
I had no idea they were going to end this title reign this soon, but I think it was the right move.
Same. And we'll dive into his title reign in a second like we like to do in our show. And just, how fucking great was this, man? And I saw Statlander came out after the match,
yep,
not on camera, because yeah, you know they're gonna save her for a big
kayfabe. Kayfabe.
She had to be there for this. And just, oh God, these guys create magic together, Garrett. I mean, hey, they are gonna technically keep this going into next week when we talk about our next week matches with the trios title. Now, it's just like, AEW. No,
honestly, if they keep it going with the trios titles, let's say because it's not really completely out of the realm of possibility because of how over the best friends are, that they could win both sets of titles. Now, would I want this trios title reign to be over quickly? No, but if you were going to run both teams double duty at the pay-per-view for Pac and Orange Cassidy, I can't think of a better way to end this story.
Yeah, and it, man,
and you don't have to have them lose, I guess, for that. But I would rather them both be, if they win those championships. I know AEW generally, because of the rankings, doesn't do that. We were going to run this back thing, but the Acclaimed and Swerve in Our Glory proved that that's a thing we can get away with in AEW. You know, yep. Not that that hadn't happened before. I'm saying it, but that to me is like the most recent instance where you could point to and be like, yes, we can do this. So why not? Why not run the greatest trio singles feud nonsense, proving that you can book all this together and make it make sense? I would love it. I'm all here for it, especially because,
and
I didn't care about this title when they first announced it, and now it's one of my favorite, you know, like
the booking it well. And you know, a real one last thought here from me, I just gotta say, since we won't talk about these matches again, bookending this show with, you know, two matches from,
yeah.
And I know this gets thrown around a lot without having WWE guys here now, and you know, other Ring of Honor guys more joined on Rampage.
Mm-hmm.
booking this, bookending this with two AEW originals, two feuds, but well, one being the tag match from the jump, like a tag team from the jump, and one being a feud from the jump. I mean, these guys, their first match was, they touched the ring together in December of 2019, and then their first iconic match at, I want to say Revolution, in February of 2020. These are longtime rivals, longtime matches. Bookending your show in Canada with this was ballsy, especially having Jericho and Danielson for the fucking title, the ROH title, on the same show.
Can I ask, have they said why that changed? It was booked and billed as the main event all the way up until Wednesday.
It is, and I think that was I think it was awesome. I think that is the way they should have done it. This deserved to go on last over the Ring of Honor World title, and for so many fucking reasons. But I just think that was such a good decision, and it paid off for not just because he won, but it paid off for everyone involved. Like, Orange Cassidy is going to be fucking huge on Wednesday. Like, his reaction to this crowd with this title now, so deserved. So yeah, let's do what we do here. PAX title reign, right? He won this at Forbidden Door. He beat Clark Connors, Malakai Black, and Miro for the title. Very fun match when he won it. And then right away, we kind of felt different. There was a difference with this title because his first three defenses were not in AEW, but they were shown on AEW Dark. So we then, he won it June 26th. July 10th, he faces Shota Umino at Rev Pro. Awesome match. Just fucking, I mean, really, this was something cool. At OTT Wrestling, so the in Dublin, Ireland. July 22nd, he defeats LJ Cleary. At RevPro again, the next night, he defeats Connor Mills. And I had never heard of LJ Cleary or Connor Mills before this, and I walked away impressed from both of them. And then we go to All Out 0 Hour, where he defeats Kip Sabian. We go to Grand Slam, where he defeats Orange Cassidy. And then Battle of the Belts, which honestly was one of the matches of the night with Battle of the Belts, he defeats Trent. And then he finally loses it here on October 12th to Orange Cassidy. Every match got a respectable amount of time, the shortest being Kip Sabian at 10 and a half minutes, but that had to be kind of chopped for time. It just, Garrett, this is a fucking, this title reigns a thumbs up.
I mean, it was
this,
literally chopped for time. The main event of that card was Eddie versus Ishii, which was all chops.
Garrett, I just saw an update right now. We have to jump the gun on news.
What happened?
Anthony Green seen backstage at NXT.
Bro.
You fucking called it. You called it.
Bro, I said this 9 months ago.
No way. All right, I'm sorry. We'll speculate about that in 5 minutes when we do news. Garrett, what did you think of his title reign?
Very good title reign. Pac, honestly, one of the best wrestlers in AEW, will continue to be underrated because he's really good. He's just lost in a sea of really good wrestlers, you know? And I think the association with the Lucha Bros keeps him relevant, but I think if they were to ever split that off, which I don't think they will, but if they were to ever, too, that it might really hurt Pac. But just because I think he'd get less TV time, to be honest with you, which sucks because he's really, really talented, you know? I remember, like, he's always been one of my favorites. I mean, there's only the only reason I ever cared about the cruiserweight division wasn't because of Enzo. It was because of this man, you know? Like, so, like, I don't know. I really would like to see this continue, this story. Like, I'm not ready for him to just be done with this championship yet. I wouldn't be against, like, does Orange Cassidy need to have a 6-month title reign? Could Pac not win it back from him and then we just continue on like nothing changed? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's totally the idea here, you know? Like, I don't think he's going to have it for more than a couple months, you know? Like, so, because I don't, you know, I don't know if this title is going to be long on anybody. It feels like the kind of title you put on somebody when they're, like, ready, you know? And you're just, maybe you weren't ready for them to be ready, but you're not going to have them beat Wardlow right now, so you can give them the All-Atlantic title and let them run with that for a bit. Go around and do essentially an excursion, you know, if they're a young wrestler. All right, picture this, Charlie, I'm just going to throw an idea at you here. I don't know how this would happen. I would assume Pac would have to win it back first or some other heel. But imagine Dante Martin wins this title, and he goes to Japan, and he goes to Mexico, and he goes... I mean, imagine the amount of experience you could give a young guy like Dante with this title. You
know, I would love it. I mean, even... We just had that big AAA event. Imagine if one of the guys took the title there, and we...
Dude.
You know...
And they would love it, too. Oh, that'd be awesome, dude. I would love it.
Favorite match from this title reign, just one that sticks out.
Well, right now I have my dark match of the year is a tie between me and Mashta and Thunder Rosa and Shota Umino and
that Yamashita match. So
I think for me it'd be that one.
Okay. And I'm with you. The Shota Umino match, it was his first defense, but man, that was fucking special. And then Orange Cassidy winning this one. Great start for Orange Cassidy's reign. So 108 total days. This was a successful title reign. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So that being said, we're going to hop into our news here. And well, let's just start with that one off the top here, Garrett. Anthony Green, we were not expecting to talk about this, guys. It's literally just broke mid-podcast. There's Anthony Green and Bobby Fish were both backstage at recent NXT live events. Don't really care about the Bobby Fish one. Anthony Green, he's 29, formerly known as August Gray during his WWE run from 2020 to 2021. He is often referenced from us as the 205 Live guys. We often mention there was a core group of 205 Live guys that were working their ass off with no one watching. Multiple are in AEW now. You got Alex Zane catching his success in Japan. Anthony Green really caught your eye, Garrett, when he came to AEW. And what's funny is they point out he's been heavily active on the independent wrestling scene. That includes wrestling in NOAH, over 100 matches over the last year. He also worked 8 AEW matches, including matches on Dynamite, one against the other man there, Bobby Fish. So Anthony Green, backstage at NXT. You have been calling this. I'm not going to take credit for this. You've been saying he's such a perfect talent with the charisma. NXT is going to get him. And now Triple H is back in charge of the NXT. And he's going to snatch
Anthony. It's not even
Anthony
the charisma,
Green.
Man. It's something I hear wrestlers talk about all the time. And it's this intangible factor.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. You either have it or you don't, though. And if you don't have it, you can't be taught it. It's not something you either have that connection or you don't. And I feel like he does. I can see it in him. Especially with the way the crowd reacts when he wrestles as a freaking jobber. You know, like I'm not saying that he's not getting help from the people he's wrestling, but I'm saying that you don't react like that to a guy unless they see something too. It's not just me, you know. It's the Universal crowds we were talking about too, because Dark was just being shot there at the time. So it's like,
man, this hurts.
It sucks because I remember saying Triple H will scoop this guy up like 10 times, just trying to scare Tony Khan into, because if you happen to listen to the show or have someone listening to the show, they scare him into signing this guy, and he just wouldn't do it. He just didn't see it in the guy for whatever reason. You know, I'll give Tony respect. He at least gave the guy a match on TV against Adam Cole, which I think underdelivered personally.
Yep.
But I don't think that should kill the guy's chances. And now look, you watch. This guy will be an NXT North American champion by the end of next year.
Yeah, he's going to be good in NXT. I mean, his rival in 205 Live, from what I remember, was Ari Daivari, who is now Ari Daivari in AEW. There's just so many. And I'm a little sad being that we're an AEW show, and you know, we had talked about he had the factor, he had it all.
Yeah.
And you know, hey, at the end of the day, I'll tell you what, fuck, if I hear he's doing stuff on NXT,
oh yeah, I'm gonna check out whenever I see he's got matches booked. I'm gonna check it out, because I remember when he got signed in NOAH, I was like really excited, because I figured when he got done with NOAH, he's going to be spectacular, because anybody that goes on a Japan excursion pretty much comes back better, you know, like, so I really disappointed that AEW didn't somehow have this guy under some amount of contract at some point. Like,
it's kind of crazy when you think about it that,
you know, what's crazy too, Charlie, you know what bothers me about this is I actually got a little excited recently, because you know what just got announced recently? I don't know if you have it in news. NOAH just made a deal with AEW, you know?
Yeah, to start, like, because Sting's going over there, right?
Yeah, it's like a loose thing. I think it's going to be more like their deal with TNA, where, like, they kind of sort of trade talent-ish. Not really, though. Like, but I assume it's, like, there'll be NOAH talent that maybe challenges for the All-Atlantic title, probably, I'm guessing. Probably be NOAH talent that maybe just shows up, like how we did with New Japan for a while. I don't know how New Japan's going to feel about this, though, to be honest with you. Because they're technically competitors, right? Like, I mean, it's not like Noah's anywhere close, but I mean, I would think, right? Maybe they don't care. New Japan is also making deals with WWE.
It's probably a couple, you know, the definition of one-offs and shit like that. So.
Well, it's like New Japan also just did something with WWE, right? Like, so, whatever. You know, I guess there's no rules anymore, but whatever. Anyway.
No rules allowed. So
none allowed, but yeah.
We've got a couple other small things here. So AEW has announced some dates and locations for Winter Is Coming and Holiday Bash. So
Winter Is Coming.
Winter's gotta love it. Winter Is Coming will return to Garland, Texas, Wednesday, December 14th. And Holiday Bash will be December 21st in San Antonio. Man, I hope Thunder's back by then, because I would love to see her. Wrestling at San Antonio. She was, oh my gosh.
San Antonio, Tony Storm versus fire. Let's throw the match on the card. Throw it on there.
That'd be cool. I think that'd be great, but man, having Thunder lose.
It'd be unlikely, I think. I think we probably know by now, right? But I don't know.
One of our newer AEW talents, Willow Nightingale, she is to make her Japan debut for Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling this month. She's really excited about it. It was supposed to happen in July, but due to visa issues, she couldn't. So she's heading over there, and she has shows October 29th and November 6th. So I'm guessing Willow might be off of our AEW TV for a little bit. But maybe they do the thing where she has a match against someone, and AEW gets the rights to it and puts it on Dark. We'll keep an eye out for that.
That'd be cool.
And other than that, that's all we got for news. I just got the stuff for next week. So
okay. Cool.
Yeah, right. Let's... you want to take care of Dark Elevation for us?
Yeah. AEW Dark Elevation, episode number 84. First of all, interesting commentary team. Three-man Paul White, Daddy Magic Matt Menard, and Ian Riccaboni. Scumbag Ian. All right. I guess they didn't bring that gimmick back, so I guess I should let it die. But anyway, So we had Sheeta opening up the show this week on Elevation with the Regina De Wave and the Ice Ribbon Tag Team Championships being sported with her as well. And she took on a jobber named Erica Lee. And Sheeta might be a wrestling genius. I think I've said this before, but I think she seems to be like able to pull just pretty much a good match out of just about anybody. Pretty much. Like, she annihilated this Whammon with a katana, and she picked up the win. Nice little win for Sheeta. We had a little bit more from AEW heels. Like I said last week, it's good to see the AEW community team getting a little bit of rub, getting a little bit of shine, you know. Get them in there. Charlie, next match, everybody dies. Lance Archer murdered Papa Don, who apparently they must have interest in signing because he was on like twice in the same week. So
yo, they let him get a lot more. He had a comeback, didn't he?
Yeah,
I was surprised at that.
There was a match here. I feel like Lance Archer is the kind of wrestler where he's like, if you start wrestling me, I'll wrestle you, but we're not going to have, like, you're not going to look great in this match. We'll just have a match. And maybe that's how it is, and most people just. But, you know, he leveled them with a really hard lariat clothesline, whatever you want to call it. And as Daddy Magic called it, he hit him with the times three big squisher. Hit him with the big squisher.
Papa Don, 45 years old, he's made his way in the New York wrestling connection, so.
I don't know what he changed about the move, too, by the way, or if he just was, like, just murdering people on purpose, but the way he's been hitting the blackout lately is, like, really clean into a pin combo, and I've been really enjoying that. This level of, like, matches that Lance Archer's been having lately makes me really excited for whatever he's going to be going into, whoever he's going to be facing for a championship, be that, you know, John Moxley, sounds awesome. MJF, which I kind of hope that it is, because I would want to see what they would do with that. But the one that I would really think would be an amazing story for Lance Archer to go after right now, Charlie, it'd be Orange Cassidy. Can you imagine the story they would tell?
Oh, wow, there could be some fun with that.
So, just some ideas there for you, Tony Khan. MJF would be great, too, by the way. MJF just won the title, and Lance Archer's like, but what if I killed you and actually murdered you to death, you know? And then just magic, you know, because, you know, MJF could cut a promo on Lance Archer, especially because he works in New Japan and he hates New Japan.
Oh, it'd be fucking great.
That'd be great. All these are great ideas. Speaking of great ideas, the next match we had on the show was Trish Adora taking on Emi Sakura. And is it Sakura or Sakura? I hear people say both. I think it's Emi Sakura. Anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say.
And that's what I usually go with whatever Excalibur says, because he's usually correct, especially with Japanese names, you know, but whatever. The man basically speaks Japanese at this point, I feel like. But anyway, there was some good stuff. We had a little eye rake shoulder tackle action from, she would get a little evil laugh from the queen. And, we had successful tea time completed. She got a couple successful tea times on Dark this week. We got Ian Wikipedia reference. Daddy Magic is fucking electric on these, man. He really is. I don't know why. Whoever's idea it was to put Matt Menard on commentary for Elevation, I love you forever. But I hope it was his idea, because that's just amazing if it was. But we had some judo throwing, which is good. Gotta love it. You know, I didn't know Trisadora was also, you know, or and Emi Sakura were both like into the judo stuff. So, hell yeah. Got a little we will chop you. So, I know the Queen's Gambit is technically the same move, I think, as the Deep Talks, right? But I think they should just rename that backbreaker to the Queen's Gambit and maybe just have her hit it like she did the first time, where it was like super fast and clean and it just looked like it hurt a lot more. Because sometimes it just looks like she does a backbreaker, you know, which is fine. That's a good move. I think just make it a little separate. And then, but anyway, she more or less picks up the win with the Queen's Gambit. They didn't call it that, but we might as well, because it won the match, so whatever.
Yeah.
It's a good match. Like seeing Trishadora get a little bit of shine. I think Emi Sakura just likes to go out there and have good matches with people, man. I don't think she cares that she's on Dark. Like, she's like, you know, I'm just wrestling here. Like, whatever, we're doing it. And so I dig that. Some more some more love for Hispanic Heritage Month. I really like this segment, actually. We got a little segment from one of the AEW Spanish commentators, which I thought was really cool. They don't do the thing that WWE does, I don't think, unless, have I just missed it when they do, like, where they're like, and these are our commentary teams. Like, they don't really do that. So.
Yeah, I can't remember seeing it.
But that being said, we had another match on the show, which was, lightweight. We had Neeson Woods taking on Action Andretti and Kyle Hawkins. Andretti? This was the first match. I was like, oh, okay, who is this Action Andretti? All right. It's like a hell of a back heel kick from Neeson this match. Ooh, Action did take a nasty spill on one of the spots in this match. I won't give him that. But and then there's like the angle slam neck breaker nonsense move that they do thing, whatever, they win. All right, Nyla Rose. Was the championship? Did I just not pay attention? Did she have it in this?
It was, no, this was taped before she took the belt. Okay. So, yeah, Tony this Khan. Is the unfortunate side of sometimes Dark falls out of order. No.
Just don't show this match. Sorry. If Nyla Rose can't be booked on TV in a wrestling match that's not on TV, which she had a match anyway, right? So why even do this? That's just dumb. This is dumb. It makes no sense continuity-wise. And AEW makes a big deal about making sure the continuity is correct. Like, they make a big deal out of that. Whatever, they're like, storylines, they make sense over multiple years. This one doesn't make sense over 24 hours, okay?
Yeah, but if you cut her match, then you're going to get people all, you know.
Why'd you choose her match? It wasn't scheduled.
Yeah.
There's no shot this was scheduled if it was taped before. So what?
A whole nother can of worms if you cut this match.
I'm not saying cut the match. I'm saying you don't show the match. You don't announce the match, because this match doesn't make any sense if she did. Or here's the other option that you have, Charlie. Don't shoot that stupid fucking angle.
Hey, man, they took advantage. We'll get into one Rampage.
I'm just saying, like, rough. This thing has, so far, this storyline has done nothing for Jade, okay? Nothing. And it's done nothing for Nyla, and it's just caused more issues continuity-wise. It's literally an anti-story. Anyway. We had Goldie, Brett Waters, and Logan LaRue taking on Dalton Castle and the boys. Boys, let's break some hearts. Oh, I love this, dude. It's so good. Oh, incredible entrance. Peacock of Pro Wrestling's here, this time to deliver. Come back to that when we get to the other match. Wet Brett. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I agree with Dalton there.
Wet Brett Waters.
That was one of the funniest things. That popped me so hard. He was like, ew.
When they were fanning him. It really got me.
Dalton Castle. I kept writing in my notes, why is Dalton Castle not on TV? We'll get to it. And the boys got names. I know they already had talked about this, but they're Brandon and Brent, I believe, are the boys' names. So
yeah, they're the Tate brothers.
Absolutely. So Brandon and Brent Tate. Love it, love it, love it. We got the bangerang for the win, and we got a little tease on commentary from Matt Menard, dude. A little 2.0 in Garcia versus Doncastle and the Boys?
I thought that was a well-put tease, and it's things like that when you have Menard on commentary, you take advantage of it.
So we might get that match next week, especially because it's leading up to Dalton versus, no spoiler. Well, whatever, it's the same show. We're getting Dalton versus Jericho next week, so we'll get that. We'll get to that segment when we get to it on Rampage, but I love that little subtlety there. That's Matt Menard knowing what he's doing. And then in the main event, oh, Charlie, the match everyone was waiting to see. The match that had fans on their feet, Charlie. Brandon Cutler versus Serpentico. All right, yeah. So before I get into my joke that I wrote for this, which is all I wrote for this, and then one other thing, Paul White made an excellent call. This is like when 0 times 0 equals 0. They canceled each other out. This literally, Charlie, you know what this reminded me of, this match as a main event? This reminds me of when you've overbooked in my GM and your superstar stamina is completely out and you have to sign Mario Vespucci from the Indies to wrestle your main event star. And that's what that reminded me of. Like when you're out of wrestlers in my GM and you have to just sign one, like some random jobber from the Indies to wrestle. Yeah, it's because you don't have anybody to wrestle. I only wrote one thing for this match, Charlie. Yawn. All right, and with that, take
wow, you didn't like this?
Boring.
Wow.
Get out of here.
I thought they called it like it was the fucking Super Bowl. The crowd was super into it.
Yeah, I didn't care, because I was like, oh, you're treating this worthless match that should have probably not even been booked, except for that you wanted to do this for some reason.
It's for the crowd. Yeah, I think they made... Look, these are two of your literal, probably the two lowest... tier wrestlers that are signed in terms of
Baron Black would like a conversation with you.
Not signed. Nope.
Wait, he's not signed?
He is not. So yikes. These two guys are like the bottom of the barrel. So what do? Stick them out there and let them have a match where the story is they both suck and the ending with the spray. Oh my God. Fucking shout out Paul White. He literally sold that like it was the fucking Super Bowl. And look. They were just having so much fun at commentary. I think it sold me over, too. This is what I love about the crowd, though. This doesn't happen at fucking Universal. This doesn't happen. This only happens to a live crowd because Brandon Cutler's over for being the fucking worst wrestler alive. That's his gimmick.
Yeah, I just didn't care about this match. All right, go ahead and take us through Dark 165, Charlie. I'll be right back. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and use the restroom. BRB.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, Dark 165, we kick it off with Lance Archer again, facing an enhancement talent, Alec Odin. I mean, like we pointed out, they're building Lance Archer up for something. What it is yet, TBD. Penelope Ford, Serena Deeb, Jamie Hayter. They took on Jordan Blade, Trisha Dorr, and Brittany Blake. Jamie Hayter is so over. I think... I don't know. We'll touch on the Daniel Garcia thing in a minute. I think that's total wrong move with him. And then they're kind of making the same mistake with Jamie Hayter. Turner babyface, man. What the fuck are we waiting for? If we wait too long, we're going to miss the hype. In my opinion. I mean, I don't know. They're going to do this Nyla Rose thing, but this babyface Jamie Hayter seemed like the one to dethrone the dominant blueprint of an undefeated champion. Hikaru Shida takes on Marina Shafir. I was completely ready to bury this. About the first half of this match, I was like, man, Marina Shafir is just, you know, Eve Garrett just alluded to it earlier. Hikaru Shida, she can go out there and have a good match with anyone. But the first half of this, I'm like, man, Marina Shafir, what's going on? It kind of all changes when she hits this crazy German suplex. And then I got the image in my eyes. I'm like, this is what she does. Marina Shafir is your fast-paced wrestler that you tag in for the tag. She hits these fast German suplexes. She hits her little over-the-shoulder, like, fucking, I don't know, moves, but tackle. She slams them. Marina Shafir hits these fast moves that in a tag team would work out theoretically very well. So pairing her up with Nyla, again, you can accomplish that. Brian Cage with Prince Nana defeated Papa Don. Again, I think they respect Papadon because they let him get some offense again at the end here. But this was just setting up Brian Cage. Brian Cage is back. He's the machine. Excalibur lets us know every time. The reality, Zach Clayton cuts a promo. He has officially signed with AEW. Good for him. Congrats on the contract, Zach. I think you've been given some opportunities and you took advantage of it and you got the contract. So at the end of the
can
day,
can I say I love Zach Clayton? To you. Love him. This segment was fine. There's nothing to do with that. The fact that this man was signed and that Anthony Green wasn't infuriates me.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compare because, you know, Anthony Green has had so much more success.
A wrestler
in his
and Zach Clayton is a reality star? I know. It's crazy. It's almost like you signed the wrestler to the wrestling company that claims to be about wrestling and not about stories. Well,
but if you're going to sign someone for Dark, I think Zach Clayton's perfectly fine. Again, yeah, it's hard. It's literally like comparing apples to oranges because Anthony Green is a legit proven wrestling commodity. But I don't know. I guess they just – part of me really thinks if we had a legit true Ring of Honor show right now and we could get some of this Ring of Honor talent off AEW, that would clear out some of these airwaves.
That's where I put Zach Clayton weirdly. You're like, oh, what? But you got to have some actual entertaining stars on there as well. You can't just have – as much as Ring of Honor has been about the wrestling product, I don't think that's the product Tony wants to make. He wants to do something different, you know? So –
oh, he he really does with Jericho now. So,
I mean, I don't, you know,
And then we jump into back-to-back matches. Fuck it. Back-to-back-to-back-to-back matches. It all kicks us off with Athena and Gia Scott. We've mentioned Gia Scott before, but she has this pace to her matches. And when you bring out someone like Athena who already keeps up with that quick pace, this felt like a legit, I felt like Gia Scott was a signed wrestler. You could stick this on Dynamite and this would have fucking worked. They had some great chemistry together. I think Gia Scott's going to start making my list of, you know, just like Queen Aminata, Trish Adora, the Renegade Twins, and well, Willow's off the list now because Willow is signed. Bring her in, man. You can only improve when you expand this roster and Athena, you know, picking up another victory here. Lock hitting the O face. Really fun match. And then we jump into an incredible match here. This was such a fun,
Hold up. I just got to acknowledge something. So I love Athena. Athena's great, incredible athlete. I just got to say, it is kind of hilarious to me that her first interview after she left, joined AEW, she said, oh, I was really mad at NXT for wanting me to be a pretty girl and do all this fucking... And then her move is called the fucking O face. Get the fuck out of here, Athena. What the hell?
I don't know.
Obviously, you like leaning into that too, Athena. You just didn't want to do it because that you're. I get it's weird that your bosses are telling you to do that, but it's also like if you're going to call your move the fucking O face on the indies, what do you think they were thinking when they signed you? Like,
I don't even know. Hey.
Like, if for example, if, like, WWE signed, say Kayla Rossi didn't get signed by AEW, I don't know if she's, like, under contract, what the deal is with that, right? But let's say she wasn't, and then she got signed by WWE, they'd know what they were getting into, and they'd be okay with it, you know what I mean? Like, anyway.
Hey, fair. Action Andretti and QT Marshall. QT is one of those guys where he constantly gets over. In every match, in every fucking... everywhere he goes, he gets over. And he had this match with Action Andretti on Dark. And holy shit, did he get Action Andretti over. Before the match, he kind of gets mockingly to the crowd. You know, has people chant at Action. But everyone's like, ah, come on. Really? We don't know this guy. Well, they knew him by the end of the match. And they knew him so much, even towards the end of Dark, he's cutting a promo... talking about I was going to be here again next week. Or in the future, I guess. I don't know if he actually was here the following week. This was just some really good stuff. He reminded me with how often he went to the top rope. There's a little Dante Martin in there. And it made me think, Action Andretti versus Dante Martin? That could be some
I was
fun
literally
stuff.
Thinking the same thing. I think that'd be a great next... like, if we're going to give squash for Dante, really solo stuff. Squash, great match.
So, yeah, these guys, they went... this match had no business being as good as it was, yet it took advantage of every opportunity, which is something we always like to point out with Dark. This is what Dark is for. Go out there, take advantage of your opportunities. Action Andretti, Gia Scott, back to back. They went and did it.
All right. My Taz roast. During this match, we actually had the continuation of the, I believe, or no, maybe it was the previous match, or maybe it's the next. No, wait, when was it? Anyway, I know I recently on the show the burial of the Padres or from the Padres to the Mets continued. has no escape this week because he also made the comment that there was no love for QT in DC, which made me LOL. OMG, TAZZ, what the fuck?
God damn it. Thank you.
I wrote that down. It probably wasn't as funny as it was in my head, but man, I wrote that down while I was watching this because that's how checked in I was in the dark by the end of it.
Dalton Castle and the boys.
They brought it back for me right here, so I was good.
Yeah, Dalton Castle, hey man. This was another fun match. Put these guys on TV, it's energy. It's magic.
He was there to deliver the first time. Now he's here to set the tone, Charlie.
Oh yeah. And the reason he was on TV was because, well, he showed up on Rampage. Kip Sabian defeated Brandon Cutler. This was... Cutler didn't want to wrestle. He kept trying to escape it. Kip Sabian played along for a little bit until he grabbed the can of cold spray. Cracked him over the head with a headbutt. Followed up by the signature hanging neckbreaker.
He talked Sabian in a box. Picks up the win.
What's that?
The box talked to him, actually, I should say. He put the box up to his ear at one point.
Yeah, man, the box speaks to him, bro. It fucks him up.
And then, like, weirdly, Penelope acknowledged the box after. It's a weird thing in their relationship, apparently. But hey, I'm here for it. I'd love to see. Dude,
whatever happens with that box.
The box threesome, it's unspoken of. The box and the threesomes, I don't know. That's some weird shit. But I'm, you know, maybe she, wait. You don't think she makes him wear it? No.
No, they definitely do. Whatever happens with that box, we don't need to know about. Then Action Andretti.
He's too good looking. Let him be. Let him be.
Yeah, Action Andretti, I think, could be one of our next guys we see on Dark a lot and eventually brought into the fold. Good for him.
Honestly, if for some reason Darius, I should say, is not able to wrestle for whatever reason because he gets a permanent. I don't want to wish this on the guy or anything like that. So I'm just saying, if for some reason, because he seems kind of injury prone, if he weren't able to wrestle anymore, Action Andretti may be the guy to replace him as Dante's partner if he wanted to be a tag, you know?
I could see it. I would love to see them together. I think there could be some magic. We have an interim AW World Women's interim AW Women's World Title Elimination Match. Toni Storm takes on Emi Sakura. Emi Sakura. This was fun, man. There was a lot of tea drinking. Toni Storm went apeshit with the hip attacks. Sweet cheek music.
A little bit of spankage happened in this match. Toni got a little too excited.
I mean, nothing wrong with a little spankage. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. And this is a fun little match. I like seeing Toni Storm on Dark. I like seeing when we have champions on Dark. It's always a fun little touch, like when Hangman was on it and Kenny Omega was on it. So it's nice to see. She delivered a Storm Zero. I mean, could this match have been on a Rampage or a Dynamite? Sure, but it served its purpose. And this was an hour and a half Dark. They got some good stuff in it. This was a fun Dark. And the fun continues. We go to the main event. Dante Martin and Matt Sydal back as a tag. They took on the Factory's Cole Carter and Aaron Solo. This is the tag from the Factory I've been pushing for. I think these two guys would work the best together. This match served its purpose, right? There was
Nikki
chaos.
Boy.
There was chaos instantly. Sydal and Martin, they took to the fly as soon as the bell rang. Sydal really kind of locked into Cole Carter. This is cool for Cole Carter, too. I mean, these are three seasoned professionals that he's with, and he's kind of the new guy in the crew. And I think he did fine. He's been doing fine in his runs since he joined AEW. We ended here with the nosedive from Martin, and that was on Cole Carter. And Martin and Sydal pick up the victory. So what's the plan with them as a tag? Not sure, but we're going places. Yeah.
Good stuff.
That being said, let's jump into Dynamite real quick. So we already talked about the opener. We then jumped to Renee Paquette backstage with Ethan Page and Stokely. They informed Private Party and Matt Hardy they have purchased the contracts of Quinn and Cassidy thanks to Jose the assistant, and they are now part of the firm. Page challenges Isaiah Cassidy on Rampage. If Cassidy wins, Private Party can leave the firm. But if Page wins, Matt Hardy becomes part of the firm as well. This was very fast.
But when they said the segment, or when they set up like the stipulation, I was like, yeah, I think I'd be fine with either result, you know?
Yeah, change up some scenery for both.
I don't know how Matt Hardy will fit into this, but...
Yeah, I don't know. We need him as a trio, as a babyface trio with Private Party. I don't know. Obviously. The firm's all heel, so maybe they defy the firm.
We'll see.
All right. War Joe time. TNT champion Wardlow and ROH TV champion Samoa Joe took on Nick Comoroto and QT Marshall, defeated them fairly quickly. I mean, look, I think even the crowd kind of feels it. What are these guys doing as a tag? It's still, I don't know it what it's setting up. I mean, the match was quick here. Joe applied the Coquina Clutch for a quick submission. Post-match, Marshall suffered a powerbomb again, putting over Wardlow. I love QT Marshall. This was quick. I mean, everyone hit their stuff, right? I guess let's jump into after the match. Then we can kind of get our thoughts on that. Before the Powerbomb Symphony can get going, Prince Nana interrupted with Brian Cage and the Gates of Agony. They have beef with Wardlow for sticking their noses in business with FTR last week. FTR comes out. Dax lays a challenge to the embassy, and they can't ask war jokes since they just had a huge match. So, they have the Toronto boy to team with. Sean Spears makes his return. He's a babyface. He had the 10 music. They're playing up the perfect 10 gimmick again. He sends Solo. Spears jumps into the ring. He sends Solo out. A big rig gets hit by FTR on Solo. But yeah, he has returned as a babyface. So, you know, he'd been gone for 5 months. I saw he cut a promo after Rampage. I didn't exactly catch it, but I believe it's stuff along the lines of, look, I mean, he has stuff happening with his family. His wife's pregnant. You know, it just took some time off. So this was cool. Now we have the Pinnacle and Warjo. Is that a team of five? So what'd you think of the match, the slight match we had, and FDR and Pinnacle reuniting? FDR, yeah. Massive pop.
I think this might have been just a tad bit overbooked here. Too many names involved a little bit just to try and get him on the show. But I mean, hey, you know, it's tough because you can't really do the thing where we're bringing Joe back, so we got to send like Sanjay Satnam in, which is kind of what it feels like they did anyway, but whatever, you know, like, you know, but we had, you know, they tried to not do that and then they did do that anyway. And who this was originally supposed to be with, like, did Joe just forget? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Swerve Strickland. My bad. Backstage, Tony Schiavone's with Chris Jericho, Matt Menard, and Angela Parker talk about the main event. Parker called Brian Danielson a liar, poaching Garcia to break up the family. Menard said last week that it hurt him a lot more than it hurt him. Jericho says he sees Garcia as a little brother, but he hasn't taken his call. Jericho said tonight isn't about cheating. He's Lionheart. All will honor the Ocho. Swerve and Billy Gunn finally have their match. Max Caster, you know, did his big pop, had some pretty great lines.
Austin Matthews reference.
Had to get the Austin Matthews references in there. I mean, Billy Gunn is just so over right now. So.
That's a little quieter than I was expecting, but all right.
Yeah, I fucked up the volume. Fuck it. Replay.
No, I think
it's Sister Me Daddy quiet. Was loud. It was hot. Billy Gunn is having so much fun with this. And, you know, he doing his little strip teases on Swerve. That popped me. I can't lie. Swerve is the heel, man. I mean, Swerve is money as a fucking heel. And he proves it week after week. The post-match, again, a little overbooked. With Mark Sterling coming out and interrupting with Tony Nese. They have a document in the USA saying Sterling now owns Scissor Me in Pro Wrestling. All the money from t-shirt sales goes to Sterling. The hand gesture belonged to him. If the Acclaim do that, he will sue.
Ugh. Bit of a kneecap of a storyline to give them to start, but I mean, hey.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's just lending them up to Neeson Woods, right? What'd you think of the match? What'd you think of the heat? And I guess the stuff after it.
I mean, so... Fun match, you know, a little bit of daddy ass, getting the, I love that it's his build name now.
Daddy ass, Billy Gunn.
Love
yeah,
it.
Right.
But, Oh Scissor Me Daddy was strong. I mean, I'm glad that Neeson Woods are finally getting something significant, I wrote in my notes, but I mean, like, it doesn't really feel like the right story to put the Acclaimed in, especially because it still feels like they're kind of in the story with Swerve in our glory a little bit, like, so it almost feels like we need something for them to do before full gear, so let's do that. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah, right. So, all right, we jump into some more backstage stuff. We had Marvez, he's with MJF, asking about the post-match with Wheeler Yuta last week. Stokely interrupts, says, people, you know, MJF is fine to do with other people, but not him. It's strike two, and if he doesn't take Carlton Banks' wardrobe off his shot, it'll be strike three. Stokely leaves. MJF says he has a storied past with Regal, and he doesn't know if he was about to shake hands of Yuta post-match. MJF's to the crowd, and most of the locker room want him dead, but he has no choice to be the bad guy. If you don't like it, tough shit. He will be AEW World Champion. He's a generation talent. I thought this was a pretty good promo by MJF.
Yeah, he said in this promo, even I don't like myself. I was like, Jesus. That was super real. You know what I mean? Like goddamn. Because we all have that part of us that doubts ourselves. So he can really, you can say that even if you're MJF. I love that MJF, even though he thinks he's the best, still is like, but I don't like myself because I know I'm an asshole. It's like, it's great.
It really is. Tony Schiavone's in the ring. He plugs that next Tuesday is AEW's World Championship match with Hangman Adam Page and Moxley. So, yeah.
Dude, this promo from Hangman.
This promo was awesome. Hangman, so Moxley's, he's back. It feels good to be in Toronto. He said most crumble under the pressure, some faster than others. Moxley says it's a job. You have to be ruthless. And that's what he loves. He mentions Hangman's name. Instant music hit. He walks out. He said he wants to say whatever he's going to say to Moxley to his face. Page said last week what Moxley said meant the world to him. Puts Moxley over as a great champion, father and husband. You know, he's doing all the good shenanigans. They cut to MJF watching above with a poker chip. I understand why they do this. I don't know if this promo needed it. Page ignores him, asks Moxley if he views him as a kid. Moxley agrees. He does view him as a kid. He said he doesn't view Page as the same guy who knocked him off a ladder 1 year ago. He doesn't think Page has the guts to pull the trigger to do what it takes to win. Sheesh. Page said he's not the same guy. He went for the Trios title with his best friends. His old friends have disappeared. He's anxious, depressed, but he's still here as a man. Like Moxley, he's lost loved ones, but as a father and a husband started punching himself and yelling in the face that he's a man. He doesn't care that Moxley's family's there next week. He's going to do whatever it takes to win the title back. He will be the next AEW World Champion. Garrett, the one thing I didn't like, while he's cutting this great promo, the crowd starts chanting MJF. Again, I think that's a sign of showing him in the crowd. I don't think they would have done that if they didn't show him. Maybe they would have. I don't know that. That's spectating. It's pondering there.
That's fine. I mean, whatever. I mean, MJF is involved in this story. So
he is. He is. But I got to just say, Hangman cut a hell of a promo here.
Absolutely.
His line about the medicine not working was awesome. You felt the passion. You feel like he wants this match. I think these guys are going to go out and have a hell of a show next week. What'd you think of the promo here and I guess our build up for next week?
Really great stuff. You know, for a short term having to be booked last minute feud because these are the only two real major world champion stars that aren't Jericho, who's tied up with Ring of Honor right now, and Danielson, who's tied up with Ring of Honor right now. So, you know, Danielson wasn't a champion, but he seems like a no-brainer for the champion, you know?
Yeah.
And you could have run that story, too. I mean, these two technically do have history, right? Danielson and we already saw them wrestle for the title recently, and it's, you know, 2-0 in AEW to Moxley so far. So, you know, there's a story there if you want to tell that, but we're not there yet. So so this as the short-term booking decision that Tony made at the time, I didn't agree with it, especially because of how connected Hangman was with all of this, but it seems like it's the only right decision you could have made. Like, you would have had to have brought in an outside star, probably, honestly, and signed them to AEW, which you could have done, and you have a couple of signings recently. You could have pulled that with Bandido. Well, I don't know if Bandido is actually officially signed, but, you know, at least we know of Rouge, and, you know, so it could have gone that way, but they decided not to. And so I'm really excited to see how this match turns out, and Hangman just continuing to improve week to week. Every time we see him, he seems like he gets better. So, you know, not that he's not there. I just think that, I'm really excited to see what they do next, especially because there's no reason why. I mean, people are probably going to say that I'm crazy for saying this. There's no reason why Hangman couldn't win this championship off.
Agreed. Yeah. Marks, you know, he definitely could, depending, especially with the way the story is being booked right now, with how passionate he is. So we jump into Chris Jericho and Bryan Danielson for the Ring of Honor World title. Look, I mean, this match, this was not their best match together. This was a perfectly fine match. It covered what it needed to. Ian Riccaboni and William Regal joined commentary. Danielson kicked away the handshake from Jericho. So they got going. The match was, you know, it was doing what it had to do. Jericho, I mean, how do we do this? Paul Turner was pulled into Danielson, took a bump. Jericho and Danielson collided as Menard threw the ROH title to Jericho. Daniel Garcia hits the ring, rips away the title from Jericho. Jericho gets shoved into the knee from Danielson, turned, was clobbered with the ROH title by Garcia. So Danielson gets clobbered by the title by Garcia. Post-match, Garcia hands the title to Jericho, cheers with the pure title. Yuta hit the ring with Regal. They had a stare down with Garcia. I mean, Danny Garcia back with Jericho. We're not doing the tag. He's not joining the Combat Club. Unless this is all an inside job, but I doubt he... Good. I don't know. I don't know if you do an inside job agreeing to take a title to the head.
Especially with Danielson's history of in kayfabe, yeah. Even of head injuries, you know what?
Yeah, so I guess anything from the match, and I don't know, man. I'm not a fan of Garcia doing this. I don't dig it. It's just it seems like we're going back, and we don't need to. So
I think it's clearly obvious that he wasn't ready to pull the trigger on Daniel Garcia in the Blackpool Combat Club. We'll get there eventually. It's like Brian Alvarez has been pointing this out recently. AEW takes way too damn long to do anything. So if you were expecting this to be something that they just did, and then it was all right, now this is how it is. The reason why that was so shocking with the Danielson, honestly, I think the only reason why the Danielson Mox thing progressed as quickly as it did into the Blackpool Combat Club is because the two of them were pushing for it so hard and he wanted to book them. I don't think he sees Daniel Garcia the same way, unfortunately. So
yeah,
and
I can see that
he has kind of treated him as secondary to Jericho in this whole thing, and that's I think why a lot of fans were excited to see him go and join the Blackpool Combat Club, because in the BCC you kind of just do your own thing and you can get away with that and it's fine, and while they're all five individual wrestlers, they just happen to tag together occasionally, you know, like, so. And then you have the glue in William Regal. But honestly, I kind of agree with the Blackpool Combat Club's take on this, which is I don't think we need new people yet. I think we've got plenty of people that had to join very quickly because of circumstances. Wheeler just being over and everyone wanting it, and then Claudio needing to fill the slot for Danielson. It just needed to happen the way that it did. Otherwise, I think maybe we would have gotten, instead of Claudio, probably Garcia. But I think the way things went, that's unfortunately how things went. So I don't put this on Tony necessarily. I think this is just how it ended up going. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I feel like it would feel a little overcrowded with Garcia in there. So
it could, yeah.
And it's just magic thing they got right now. So, you know, like, do you really want to mess with that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So we jump backstage with Renee Paquette. She's with Nyla Rose, Marie Shafir, and Vicky. Nyla makes a Judge Dredd reference and says she is the law, holding the TBS title. Anna Jay interrupts, challenges for a title match on Friday for a title that isn't even hers. Nyla accepts. Wasn't actually a title match. It wasn't billed as a title match. They're not doing that. But yeah, Nyla and Anna Jay for Rampage. AW, so as we do with the women's, they're back-to-back segments. AW Interim Women's Champion Toni Storm and Hikaru Shida take on Jamie Hayter and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. The crowd, again, vocally behind Jamie Hayter. Hayter has a very fast opening sequence with Hikaru Shida. Storm makes a quick tag, beats down Hayter. Look, Baker actually shut down the sweet cheek music. What the fuck is your problem? Hayter clobbered Storm with a running boot. And yeah, we jumped at commercial. So yeah, there's some shenanigans afoot. Long story short, Storm ends up hitting a corner tornado DDT and a Storm Zero on Baker. Hayter tackles Storm onto Shida, making the cover. Hayter was sent outside where Storm hit another tornado DDT. Baker briefly had the lockjaw on Shida. And I love seeing Britt Baker and Hikaru Shida in the ring together again. It just, it takes me back to their awesome little feud. And I thought when the women's world title was with Shida and went to Baker, it was a really fun time. So Shida hit the spinning Falcon Arrow on Baker. Both ladies traded pin attempts until Shida got a high stack for the Flash win. This was action-packed. That's the best thing I can say.
Toni Storm had some really cool gear, too. I liked that.
And this win, as we know, it elevated getting Shida into the women's title picture. So she has a title match next week. if this was for the actual title, I would feel a little more inclined that maybe Sheeta has a win. But I just don't believe anyone's going to win an interim title. I don't think AEW is going to do that. So
no, they'll do it eventually. It'll be like one of the. It'll probably be like there'll be an interim All Atlantic champion at some point. Everyone will be like, we don't really care, you know, because it's the All Atlantic.
Yeah,
could have just put that on somebody else, you know, like.
But, definitely, they could do something like that. But Garrett, what did you think of this fucking high action, fast paced tag match? And I think all four involved look good here, and it looks good on them.
Yeah, I think it. It's like a lot of the matches, you know, like I think it's just unfortunately where they get placed in the card is that a lot of times they end up with a commercial break like pretty early on in the match. But as soon as it comes out of the commercial break, it picks up really fast. And like you said, you hit this sequence of signature moves and back and forth and a little bit of shenanigans from the outside, a little bit sort of ish kind of, you know, Sheeta, I think, picks up a massive win here. I don't feel like Sheeta's on TV just to pick up one massive win and then be off TV for like 3 months. But hey, I mean, I'm here for it, I guess.
If we can get back to an era Sheeta world champion, my God, I would love it. Yeah, all in all, I thought Dynamite was solid. Again, the crowd took us home. Nothing I truly disliked in terms of matches. I didn't, you know, a couple of the segments I didn't agree with, but as always, I'm open to see how it gets played out. So let's jump into Rampage, huh? We kick it off with Rampage.
This is Rampage, baby.
Rampage, baby. AEW World Champion John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli take on The Butcher and The Blade with The Bunny.
Who? No.
This was...
Sorry, I'm not bringing that back. Yeah. Zach Layton.
I mean, this match was definitely run-of-the-mill. Nothing too crazy. This was just Moxley and Claudio wrestling as a tag. You know, shout out the crowd. Hey, our world champion's here. He's wrestling. Claudio looked good. Butcher the Blade were over in Canada, dude. Holy shit.
And I mean, you know.
It was nice to see, though, right? It's kind of a change of pace.
The Bunny's Canadian. I don't know if the Blade is, but
I actually don't know that. But they were over.
But at the very least, you had the Bunny out there rocking the Toronto colors, you know?
Yeah. So... Claudio hits the, the Ricola bomb?
The Ricola bomb.
Ricola bomb.
Ricola.
While Moxley gave the Death Rider to Blade, and Castagnoli got the pin. Good for him. Well deserved. Quick match to open up Rampage again. Entrance is cut. Entrance is on YouTube. So, they cut a brief promo after the match. I don't really get all of what it was. It was more along, something along the lines of, like, you know, we're here. If you step in the ring with us, you're going to get your ass whooped.
Oh, yeah. The big line was... Tell Claudio, tell him what's going to happen if, you know, if he doesn't get step up in this match. He says, you're going to get stepped on, son.
I liked it. It was well done.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Renee Paquette interviews Swerve and Keith Lee. Strickland tried to make plight. You know, he tried to make light of a claim losing Scissoring to Mark Sterling. Lee took issue to how Swerve had to cheat to beat Billy Gunn on Wednesday.
Yeah, you kind of put him on blast a little bit, man. A little bit of heat there.
I think his line was something along the lines of, you're swerving into the wrong lane.
Yeah.
Okay.
We might have Lee versus Swerve at Full Gear instead of Acclaim. Instead of them running that back, they may run that back instead. You just don't know.
Yeah, that's what
Acclaim can defend the tag titles on the pre-show against Tony Nese and Josh Woods. That could happen, Charlie.
We could live in that world. We're back. We hit commercial. We go backstage again. Renee is interviewing the Dark Order. But I love seeing Renee back here. So it feels like she's
definitely going to fill our role. Now Tony Schiavone doesn't have to run back and forth 15 times a show between commentators.
Tony Schiavone should no longer have to do these interviews. He can do
it. He can still do them if he wants to. I actually would like. I like him being part of the group with Britt Baker. I just, you know, I'm not every 5 minutes that we can get an interview. You know, like.
So Dark Order's back there. They get interrupted by Jose. 10 has challenged Roosh for next week, and if 10 wins, then Roosh and Jose have to leave the Dark Order alone. They put their hands in to do their, or not my bad, it's not hands, they put their claws in. Stu Grayson puts his claw in last. Good reaction from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
He's returned for at least one night. I guess there isn't word on if this is permanent, but it sounds like he's back. No one's really heard one thing from...
Why put it on TV if he's not back, right?
Exactly. Like, why put it on TV and not even in the ring if he's not back?
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And look, we're not the first ones to tell you this. The Dark Order have had a little bit of a dry spell since these guys have left between Angels and him. They had their insane match at the last pay-per-view, blanking on its name. But that was it. But him and Hangman was in the match. He's not even technically in the Dark Order. So
it was All Out, I believe.
There it is, All Out. I think this is good. And especially if Ten ends up leaving now, you can go, you can have Grace, you can have Stu and Uno with Hungy and Reynolds.
Hungy?
Jericho Appreciation Society.
Versus Orange Cassidy action for the title?
I would buy that match totally, 100%, 10 ways on Sunday. Jericho Appreciation Society is cutting an in-ring promo together again. No Sammy and Ty Mello. So everyone's kind of, you know, doing their praises. Danny Garcia's putting his fists in the air like he does because he's now a sports entertainer. The crowd chants, "You're a wrestler, Garcia," anyways. He revisits our favorite quote. And
my name is
play
Daniel Garcia, and I am a sports entertainer.
He's now said it twice. It sounded very similar to that. That was the first one.
Yep. It literally sounded like, I was like, he got the intonation down perfectly. I wonder if he like looked back at it, like, or if he just knows how to, if it's the way he talks, you know, maybe, but like.
But let's be honest. All of that, even with the Anna Jay gimmick infringement on the Eat Sleep Elite podcast. Jericho's interrupted by Dalton Castle. Bring me a bot! What's the entrance? Boys? I forget. It's something beautiful. His first line, it's at... Oh.
He does a different thing every time, but like this recent time, it was boys, let's break some hearts, and I was just like, oh, let's fucking go.
The peacock power, he called Jericho a stupid, silly, naive little goose.
Little goose?
The crowd was chanting for him. I mean, he is fucking over. And this just kind of goes along the lines of, I felt like everyone was having fun at Rampage. And that Absolutely. Continues throughout the night. Everyone was having fun.
Hell yeah. That's what we like to see. Wrestling should be fun. It shouldn't be
wrestling
fucking
should
stupid.
Be
it shouldn't be fist fights in the backstage with your EVPs. It should be actually fun.
Or exactly. I mean, you shouldn't be getting. No one should be fighting. Come on, guys. All honor the Ocho. I mean,
Andrade Castle, can fight. I'm fine with it. He can.
Does Castle have a shot in hell at this?
No, but it's going to be a great match.
Agreed. And we know Jericho. He's going to put Castle over.
Oh, big time. He did it with fucking Bandido, dude. Imagine what he can do for this guy who's got incredible charisma.
I'll tell you what. If we lose out on Anthony Green, but we bring in Dalton Castle into the fold permanently.
Good trade. I'm for it, but I'm also really pissed about Anthony Green still.
I can live with, if we had to pick, you know, if there's some kind of trade-off, I'll take it. We jump into our ladies segment, our women's segment. Nyla Rose with Marina Shafir and Vicky Guerrero defeated Anna Jas, who was out there with Angelo and Matt Menard. So, Nyla Rose is seen carrying her TBS championship belt, and Anna Jas wins. She will get the belt. So, not actually for the title, of course. The match is not the story here. The match was pretty quick. This was Nyla Rose, again, asserting dominance, because it's Nyla Rose. It's what she does. She whoops ass. She beats everyone's ass. Jay went for the Queen Slayer. Rose countered it. Jay dove onto Rose, and Rose caught her with the delivered the sit-out powerbomb for the win. After the match, so Vicky Guerrero, Marina Shafir at the ring, both of us kind of thought, wait a minute, Marina Shafir kind of looked good with that title.
Literally. I sent you that message. Like I watched Rampage a little late this week, just because I was watching playoffs and stuff like that, but God, sitting on her shoulder, man. It looked good. She looks like a champ. I just gotta say,
I'm not sure if you're here while I was talking about the Sheeta match, but when she has some explosive. She has some explosiveness, and
I actually didn't catch the part where you're talking about. I agree that if either her or Nyla could bump for that comeback, and maybe she can be taught to do that, that I think that she could absolutely fill that role. I mean, imagine her coming in hot after you just got Toni Storm tagged in from Thunder Rosa, who was just beat up for 10 minutes by Nyla, and just bumping like crazy for the baby faces. I mean, I can see that happening.
Yeah.
It'd be great, you know?
So,
like,
agreed. So after the match, they all hit the ring. Vicky, Marina, Nyla, and Vicky holds up a sign that says 1-0, and she starts screaming, yeah, like shaking, and she's just, again, having fun. And the crowd bought into this. This isn't Vicky Guerrero fucking on Dark a couple weeks back. That was just so, like, cringy. And it was awful. And they've completely switched gears. They're now just – they're going to have fun with this. Because I think something tells me they're going to lean more into Nyla's, like, funny – everyone knows Nyla's funny. If you follow her on Twitter, if any social media, Nyla's just very funny. You got to lean into that. And this is a sign to me that they're going to start doing that. So this is your classic steal the belt thing, right? How are you going to do this against Jade? Well, Jade and the baddies, the music hits. Pretty good, decent reaction. The baddies say, you know what? Let us take charge. Let us go after the security guards, which, you know, just four independent wrestlers. You know, we all know how this goes. The baddies, they're not getting any they're not getting anywhere. So what does Jade do? Jade storms up and kicks the living shit out of one of these guys, followed by a brutal punch to this little blonde girl. She sold it like $1 million, by the way, because she got fucking clocked. And if you guys remember Jade and Red Velvet, Jade will hit you. This is not, you know, this is a big thing on, what was it, Rose to the Top with Brandy. Jade will fucking lay you out. That's just what she's going to do. She sold that like $1 million. That other girl caught the elbow to the fucking chin. And then another dude gets laid out. When she hit that first kick, the crowd fucking erupted. I think that was a good sign. This is different. This is a different side of Jade. I mean, look, they can't do the same thing over and over and over and over. You've done it 12 times. So with Nyla, they're doing something different. How is this going to work out? Who knows? They're chasing the belt. This is something we've seen 1,000 times. Yeah. Security goobers laid out. That first kick, that is a gift that is going to play on my head and repeat forever. She kicked the fuck out. If you guys have not seen that gif, just type in Jade Cargill. You will see it. That motherfucker got knocked.
I don't care. The belt, anytime someone steals the champion, to me, I'm just like, you don't. But why? This doesn't make any sense, because like, if Charlie, if we're trying to book this like it's a fucking sport, if you stole the fucking Lombardi trophy from the city that it resides in currently, which by the way, there's multiple Lombardi trophies anyway, but well, let's just assume there was just one, like the Stanley Cup, right? That actually does get moved around, I think, you know, I don't think they make a new cup every year. If you stole that, I don't know, like, let's say they do not move it around every year. You're just stealing one of, like, if we're talking about teams that have won multiple championships, you're just stealing one of, like, six or something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
If we're talking about it in a real sports context, so if you stole the boxing world championship, you would be arrested, you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make any fucking sense to me. It never has.
These types of things will never make sense. You have to, if you're going to do it, this is now the second time we've seen it, because Adam Cole and Fish and O'Reilly did it, and they had the whole celebration with it. If you're going to do it, you got to try something. And hey, maybe it'll work with Jade, because I'm curious now, following this fucking scuffle, what's going to be the talk? Because when Jade does shit like this, this is what she does that catches people's attention. So it's a different look. Again, they got to, if they're going to lean into this, you got to let Nyla be Nyla. I think we can all agree with that. This can't. Remember Adam Cole took the world championship on a fucking talk show? Jesus Christ. A pre-taped segment. Ari Daivari explains his offer to Hook. It wasn't to join the Trustbusters. It was $50,000 for Daivari to buy the FTW belt. If Hook isn't interested in selling the belt, Daivari will beat him for it. Okay. Ethan Page squashes Isaiah Cassidy. 2 minutes. Cassidy misses senton. Page had a twist of fate, and then the Eagle's Edge to get Page the win. As a result, Matt Hardy has now joined Hathaway's crew, The Firm.
Like I said earlier, I'm not quite sure where Matt Hardy fits into this. Like you said, I kind of like the idea of them fighting from the inside, but that we kind of got that with Wardlow already a little bit earlier this year with MJF, yeah. So I don't know if you want to do that again, but with a group, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I could see, though, I would love, because remember, it was originally Andrade that came in and ruined the HFOs, right? So, or took it over completely.
So I would like to, maybe we get a little reverse from that, and it all ends with a Hardy versus Andrade match or something because of the history there. I don't know. Or maybe, ooh, here's an idea. I wish they had signed Dragon Lee, man, because it'd be so great if you
Oh my god, that would have been so nice.
Andrade, Rush, and Dragon Lee versus Hardy and the Private Party. What a match. But
oh, that would have been so nice.
I mean, they could always just bring Dragon back and Lee for another one shot, right?
Yeah, why not?
He's not signed anywhere, so yeah, fuck it.
So we get that pre-taped segment. Orange Cassidy's happy, won the 8 Atlantic title. He and the best friends won a challenge to Triangle, the World Trios. How about Tuesday and Dynamite? Dynamite's on Tuesday this week. Orange Cassidy didn't get the memo. All right, our main event of Rampage. FTR and Shawn Spears.
This is Rampage, baby.
They take on Brian Cage in the Gates of Agony. Shawn Spears called Cage a 900-pound charisma vacuum. Wow. He called himself a perfect 10 in the pre-match, bro. Well, that's a tough one. So I bet Cage probably like, really, bro? You gonna do me like this? Bishop Khan and Spears, they started the match. The crowd's chanting 10. And people are wondering, is he doing this a lot more than he ever has in AEW? Absolutely. He never was the perfect 10 in AEW. He's been the chairman since the jump. This is the first time. He hasn't done this gimmick in like 3 years, 4 years. So it's cool. Again, it feels fresh to me because he hasn't done it so long. And I can't remember how big of a fan you were of this gimmick. I really loved it.
I never really cared for the 10 part. I just liked him as a wrestler. I always thought he was really good in the ring.
I thought he would be a really good mid-carder when he got to the main roster.
Same, and he almost was. It seems like what they were setting him up for, and they just never used him, you know? So
never used him. So they go to the split screen. Oh, man, something happened during a split screen I want to talk about. I think it was last week, though. A lot happened during a split screen segment in the Pirate Party.
I know
at
one point.
Last week.
Oh, yeah, so I've kind of changed my mind about that. You got to give stuff to the crowd, too. I mean, here's the thing, right? If it's something like somebody going through a table or something, yeah, that should probably be on when it's on, right? But somebody, like, running into the stairs or somebody being thrown to the barricade, does that need to be? You can kind of see what is happening with those. You know what I mean? I do agree that I would like everything major to be on TV, but I don't know if I'm strict about it as much now because if you really want to see everything, you can get the Fight TV feed. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And yeah, this was a fine main event. This was FTR and Spears kind of just beating another team.
Mm-hmm.
And more along
the
lines.
I think the Embassy actually looked great here, though, man. I'll disagree. I think they actually, this is a couple matches in a row now we've seen the Embassy and FTR working. And I thought FTR was giving them a really good match last week, but I think they really stepped up in this one. I think they did their part. Brian Cage continuing to fire on all cylinders. Dude, I think this might be the premier faction of the new Ring of Honor. I'm going to say it now.
Okay. Other than like JAS, definitely, they're giving them a shot. But they're giving them the opportunity to earn that.
So I would love to see it. You know what I mean?
We got to mention the sharpshooters. Huge
spot. Oh, yeah, the
spot
triple sharpshooters. That was a great spot. Getting Prince Nana involved. So Prince Nana can wrestle. I wasn't sure. So, you know, I mean, at least could take a bump. You know what I mean? Obviously, you know, like sell a move. So that's good. Like that. That's Shawn Spears. I don't even know if that was planned, but Shawn Spears chucked his ass in the ring and said, nah, we're doing it.
FTR hit Khan with the heart attack, and Spears followed up with the C4 for the pinfall. So
dude,
Spears
threw the shit out of himself into those steps, by the way.
Yeah, he did.
Whew. Got to get the big man taken out, though. Hey, good spot to take him out, but that looks like it hurt.
Oof. What do you think of Khan going by Bishop Khan? I think it works.
I like
they
it.
Gotta
no,
give
it's
a
good name.
It
good
too.
Name. I liked Khan. It was cool when he was on his own. I think if he was a solo, I'd like him to be Khan. But now that he's Bishop Khan, obviously just be Bishop Khan. You know what I mean? Because it's a good name.
He
sounds like, Charlie? He sounds like a fucking comic book character. Bishop Khan.
He really fucking does, man.
Sounds like he'd be like, I don't know, like Moon Knight's friend or something. You know what I mean?
Former Ring of Honor 6-man world tag team champ.
Hey, man.
Bishop Khan.
I remember like liking Khan and then also liking Toa, and then they tagged him together. I was like, this is a good tag team. And then and they went with Tully, and then Tully went away, and Prince Nana
came in. You
know,
I always wonder with Shane Taylor Promotions now, is there any shot that, since Khan was in that, you know,
mm-hmm.
is that book closed now?
Maybe. Possibly. I mean, the Embassy doesn't have to last forever. It feels like it could be one of those factions that could fall apart really quickly after they lose if it doesn't. Not this time, but like later down the line, if they lose a major match, it could fall apart. It doesn't feel like a permanent fixture, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, and after that, the babyface celebration was cut short by the debuting Maria Kanellis Bennett and the Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. Maria claimed they built up the Ring of Honor and IWGP tag team titles first. They never get the credit they deserve. The members of the embassy jumped FTR and Spears. Kingdom joined in. It was a 5-on-3 until Wardrobe came in and chased off the heels. So, if the Kingdom have arrived, Matt Taven, former world champion.
Maria Kanellis, fine. I've heard of Matt Taven. I think I've seen a Matt Taven match. But you know me, though. I am a Mike Kanellis guy. Like, and yeah. I've always been. I remember at the tail end of their run with Impact, back before they came back to the WWE, I really got excited because I had heard rumors they were going to come over there. I was like, all right, I'm going to check out this guy's matches then. And he actually has some really good matches. Like, I'm really excited to see what they do, you know? Again, this is way overbooked, this entire thing, but...
They love doing that.
But, you know, whatever. I'm sure it'll be something on the pay-per-view, the pre-show, the probably the next 17 weeks of television will be this. Like, Maria Kanellis, though, do you think wrestler just there in, like, a management role? What do you think?
Probably just management.
Okay.
And this has got a lot of people talking.
The original I would like Kingdom. To see her interact with the women's division, though. Come on.
Yeah,
not necessarily fair. In a physical role, but like I would love to see her just roasting some people backstage.
The original Kingdom. Taven, Bennett, Cole.
Oh.
Are we going back?
Maybe
Adam
eventually.
Cole is the founding member of the Kingdom.
Here's the problem, Charlie. Here's the problem. Adam Cole still has to deal with the fact that the last time we saw him on TV, he beat up the Elite. So we have to take care of that, which means yep. probably having to bring back the Elite whenever you bring back Adam Cole, whether they're ready, whether you're ready to bring them back or not, just so you can deal with that storyline, you know?
Do we bring in a new Kingdom?
Because you don't have Fish anymore, right? So you could have him and O'Reilly just agree to go their separate ways, maybe, because he's like, hey, man, Kyle, I saw you were really close to a world title shot.
He brings O'Reilly into the Kingdom with him, and now it's this group of four.
I don't know if you need
to
know, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if you need to bring O'Reilly in. Just let O'Reilly go on his singles run, because I really still want to see that. That singles run that O'Reilly was about to go on before he got injured, dude. Oh.
Yeah.
I want to see that still. And so you can bring him in if you want, but I would... Charlie, I'm in. I like this idea.
I am too. So let's hope Cole's all good. There were some reports about, you know, how bad is his concussion. There was some speculation. No one knows anything yet. I'm hoping he's all right. We love Adam Cole here. And yeah, so.
It's an Adam Cole bay pod.
Adam Cole bye-bye. This was a hot episode of Rampage, man. This was fun. And I'm glad we're getting more live Rampages, even though this one was technically taped, I want to say Thursday. I don't think this was immediately following Dynamite, so. Cool. Next week, let's jump into it. Tuesday, we have AEW Dynamite. Moxley defends against Hangman. AEW Women's Champion Toni Storm defends against Hikaru Shida. ROH Champion Jericho defends against Dalton Castle. Trios Champions Death Triangle defend against Orange Cassidy and Best Friends. All four of those interest the shit out of me.
Banger after banger after banger after banger.
Well put. Rampage, Hook versus Ari Daivari, FTW title. Are we going to let Hook get like a 10-minute match? Are we going that route?
Maybe. I hope so. That'd be awesome. Let's go. I'm down. Let's do it.
And then Preston Vance versus Roosh. Let Vance cook.
Yeah,
do it. Don't let this be like a 4-minute thing.
We've seen Vance cook at least once, and he did okay. I'd like to see against Roosh. I bet Roosh challenges this guy, so let's see it.
Agreed. This could be good. Man, that's it for us, Garrett. That is it for us this week.
Yep.
Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. We posted this on Sunday this week. So, yeah, Tuesday Dynamite. I'm pretty excited for a Tuesday Dynamite, actually.
Charlie?
All things considered.
It's time. So, send the Yanks packing, boys.
We got to get the Yanks packing. Tonight's the penultimate
Yankees
episode.
Yankees pack. Smoke up, everybody.
Smoke them if you got them. And then tonight, we got the penultimate episode of House of the Dragon. If any of you guys are watching that, AEW had a show about it.
Who will be the king now that the spoilers?
That's right. We're going to get a new king. We got, we had She-Hulk end this week. We had Rings of Power
end
this
week. Catch up on everything else. I didn't bail on She-Hulk. I just kind of fell off. Like,
now that it's all out, it's a really easy watch.
I think that's what episodes. I was trying to do. I was waiting. I was like, you know what? I like the first four episodes, four in a row. Let's see the last however many are, but last three or four, however many were left. You know what I mean? I was like, I'll watch the rest of these in a row. We'll see.
So that'll be it for us, guys. Next week, we'll be back. We'll be talking some of the goodies. Hopefully, we're celebrating the Guardians in the ALCS. And
hell yeah,
the Yankees. We'll catch you guys on the flip side, Vision. See you guys.